You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today in the pangs of summer. Luckily enough, here with Jenny Britton Bauer of Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream, that is. Just recently received your cookbook put out by Artisan this summer. And man, even being a lactard, I've been salivating over it. Luckily, I brought a whole bunch of lactate pills so I can sample your wares, but thank you for coming in from the Midwest.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Your childhood, were you a big ice cream eater?
No.
No? No sweets?
Oh, lots of sweets. Every dessert is my favorite dessert. Pecan pie, key lime pie, brownies. But ice cream, not so much. I ate ice cream almost every night, though.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, I came from a family who had candy dishes all around, homemade candy, fudge and whatever, all over the house in different places. My grandmother, I just ate sweets my entire life.
Yeah.
But ice cream was something I ate almost every single night and never really thought about.
Yeah, yeah. And what kind of, like, Häagen-Dazs and...
Just cheap white.
Yeah, cheap white in a pint, big spoon in front of the
and
TV.
Sometimes my grandmother would put her strawberry jam on it.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. I always loved that.
Yeah. When do you think the first time you had so-called artisan ice cream, handmade ice cream?
Well, I would say the first time that I made it. I worked, but that's not exactly right. I mean, I worked at Grater's Ice Cream when I was in high school.
Yeah. What is Grater's?
Grater's is a local, actually, they're from Cincinnati, Ohio, and they're well known in the ice cream world for making really great ice. And they make it in small batches, I think, you know, two gallons at a time, and they have to pull it out with a paddle.
Yeah.
And it's good ice cream. So I had that, but what happened was when I was working at Grater's, a French bakery opened up across the parking lot, and so I used to go over and get a fresh baguette right out of the oven,
mm-hmm.
and go back to Grater's and put vanilla ice cream and strawberry sauce on the baguette and eat that sandwich. Amazing.
Yeah.
There's that.
Yeah, this was the French bakery you ended up working in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what's it called?
It's called Le Chatelaine.
Yeah, I didn't want to butcher that French word, so
yeah.
Made you say it.
They're like my second family. They're wonderful people.
But it was kind of old world tradition. I mean, it wasn't like...
Very rustic.
Yeah.
Although they would make macarons in their kitchen. Beautiful.
Yeah.
They wouldn't sell them out front. And recently they've been selling them a little bit more, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was during high school.
Yeah.
So, formative, working in a bakery. Did you have aspirations to become an ice cream chef?
No, not at all. I still wanted to be, you know, a fashion designer or whatever. my grandmother's an artist, so I always just sort of knew I would be in art.
Yeah, what kind of art does she do?
She's an art teacher and an English teacher.
Yeah.
And she's still alive. She's in Arkansas. But she painted. She did everything. I mean, she painted... she still paints. She makes things. So she, we would, you know, be driving in the truck or whatever. We pull over and pick a bunch of cattails out of the ditch and go dry them, dye them, and make baskets.
Yeah.
You know, she was always, you know, on some whim.
Yeah. I love that tactile DIY thing that everyone thinks is nouveau at the moment.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, she would make wall hangings out of her own dog's fur. I mean, just, you know, always, always busy.
Yeah.
You know, and we had 10 acres of forest land that we had maybe 12 gardens in. So we tapped our maple trees. We had honeybees, got our own honey. She tended many, many gardens. We had one garden just for her favorite flower, gladiolas.
Yeah.
We built a teepee, authentic, because she's very much into, she researches everything she does. before she even gets started, and it can take months or a year. So when we built this teepee, we then painted it. You know, it was it's an amazing place.
Yeah. Well, I see you have some of your grandmother's traits as well.
And my other grandmother, too. She's an entrepreneur.
Excellent. Back to the bakery, though. I mean, having these very tactile old world traditions, you know, croissants and otherwise, is this where you learn your, like, foundation for handcrafted?
Definitely. I didn't get to spend much time in the kitchen when I was in high school, but I asked for that. I begged them to give me a kitchen position later on, and they did, and I got to make all the croissants from scratch for about a year. So I would make 1,000 a day or something. I mean, just from
scratch. Oh, I hope you had a
sheeter. Maybe not a day. Yeah. It couldn't have been a day. Hundreds a day.
Yeah.
And, I did. Yeah. But I will tell you, that thing doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
Or maybe I just wasn't that good at it. You know, it depended on the humidity. And like I say in the book, like the phases of the moon could affect how it, you know, the croissant dough is so...
Biodynamic croissants.
So, you know, you're putting it through there or whatever. And you couldn't leave until they were all done.
Yeah.
Because there could, you know, can't open tomorrow without croissants. So... Anyway, it was a wonderful thing. But I always went home smelling like Pluger butter, which was fabulous. I mean, I love that.
So eclairs, Napoleons, tarts, pastry cream.
Yes, and I wasn't in charge of making the Napoleons or eclairs. I did make pastry cream because I would fill croissants with that sometimes. But I was with the chefs. I had my own sort of corner.
Yeah.
Everybody else in the kitchen spoke French. Except me. And so I would just sort of walk over and look at what they were doing and help a little bit and, you know, make a ganache or whatever for the cakes and, you know, spend a little extra time.
So it's interesting. Why did you end up going to art school or look towards French art rather than culinary school?
I was already doing that, and it was just sort of, I just fell in love with art history as I was taking classes at Ohio State and then doing fine arts too. That was when I came up with this idea for ice cream. It was an accident.
Yeah.
And I'd had some experience at the bakery just being there. And I think I just sort of knew about ingredients. I mean, one thing before I even got to work in the kitchen, one thing I used to do is, and I don't know that they know this, although they probably do now, is I would lock myself in the pantry or in the cooler and like eat the pastry. There were like cake ends and pastry cream and Valrhona chocolate and these really delicious tinned apricots from France that they would bring in. And I just was like... in heaven.
But at the same time, don't you wish they had secret video of you doing that that you can have on your own website or for your own...
It would be the best reason to go to jail.
Yeah.
Stealing from the pantry of the pastry chef.
That's not too bad. So going to art school, though, you studied French art. You said in your book, Gaelic.
I was very into French art. I mean, and I'm kind of all my life have been like an armchair sort of French... I don't know. I wouldn't say historian, but maybe just fascinated with... I mean, I read all the books on Marie Antoinette and Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Yeah.
And had big crushes on Henry Plantagenet and all, you know, all those old, you know, French characters and all that. So it's just sort of, you know, it's just something I loved.
Yeah, but I mean, in a lot of that literature, too, there was a very copious and illustrious desserts. I mean, there was always a sweet
tooth. Well, especially in Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
Well, we did a whole collection of ice creams a few years ago when Sofia Coppola's movie came out. Because when I heard she was doing a movie, I was unbelievably excited. And I love that movie. And so I did a whole collection of ice creams that I thought would be... Some of them were flavors that I think would have actually been around in Marie Antoinette's court, like violet that we don't get here very often. And we imported this violet extract from this... we directly imported it from this small farm in south of France. Actually, our friends from the United States, wine merchants, they imported it for us. And
yeah. Excellent. What other flavors did you concept?
The Pear Riesling was made for that. That sort of Austrian thing.
Yeah.
The best one, which we still make a lot, is brioche with butter and jam.
Oh, yeah.
Toasted brioche.
Yeah, I'm making that one. I saw that one.
I love that flavor. So then I went back to the French bakery where I worked because that was the other thing I made is the brioche. And so I had them make all the brioche for us.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, too, to see, and we'll talk about more of the recipes and the process of ice cream, but we'll skip ahead to your collaborative nature is really cool, that, you know, after making all this ice cream, you reached out to the bakery you worked with, you reached out to other vendors in, where are you, in North Market was your first store, and you reach out to other vendors, there was a, you know, Indian food, and incorporating sweet curry into your ice cream. Do you like working with the local community in that way?
I feel like I grew up in the market. I mean, I started my first business there when I was 22, but I had also been going to the market since I was a kid. And there's about 60 merchants in the market, including the farmers that are outside. So it was sort of natural. First of all, I was a very, it was a tiny business, and I couldn't afford to make any big orders with any bigger companies.
And this was Scream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just went and bought, you know, I took my $10 and I went around the market and figured out what I would buy with it and make ice cream out of it. You know, I mean, that was really how I started. And it was the best place to learn about ingredients and to try techniques and whatever. It was just the best. So I met everybody. And that just became the way that I do business.
Yeah.
You know, I don't ever want to go to do it differently. I mean, that's how I know. I still work with the merchants in the market and I'm inspired by them. Mike, the cheese guy. That's actually his name. He knows more about cheese than I'll ever know. And I don't need to know that much about cheese because I can go down to Mike's and
it's called delegating. Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right. And the other thing is it's really cool because when you make an ice cream out of something that somebody else made or imported or whatever, they get really behind it too and they start spreading the word about it. So it's pretty good business model, actually.
So cheese, Gorgonzola. I think there was a Gouda in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other cheeses have you put in your ice creams?
Let's see. Well, Parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
And goat cheese, just a fresh goat cheese. The Gorgonzola is probably, well, the goat cheese are most popular. I think that's about it.
Cream cheese.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, mascarpone and ricotta. Trying to think if there's anything else over the years. Probably.
Yeah. And
Cheddar.
Cheddar? Oh, yeah. Really?
For apple pies.
Excellent. So did you do an apple pie cheddar ice cream?
No, just cheddar. Because sometimes I just like to make ice creams that you can use to put on your dessert.
That's awesome.
You know, and in the market, we were a grocery destination. So I knew that you could get an apple pie right down the way from Amy the baker. And so, you know, my, the Gorgonzola would go with her pear tart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she also was the impetus for your butterscotch.
Cocoa nib.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great. She's a wonderful baker.
And I love that Lebanese, you know, eatery that you had, pomegranate molasses ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, just walk around the market. Everything that's there at some point made it into ice cream, except for the cow eyeballs. The, you know, there's a butcher shop in the market, and the kids grew up with me. I mean, I love all the kids. They're now, like, you know, in college now, all these kids. But, you know, they'd run around the market, the butcher's kids, with eyeballs of various animals.
Yeah, but that's not to say there isn't proteins and fish in some of your ice creams.
That's true. And for various chefs over the years, I've done, you know, different fish or a fish ice cream or smoked salmon or, the veal and raspberry.
Yeah. What was that for? Was it demi-glace?
Yeah. Chef Elena, in Columbus, she's always up for anything. And it was her idea actually.
Yeah. And the bacon praline.
Yeah. Which was, which I have to give my husband credit for. There was a great breakfast place in Columbus that did brown sugar bacon. He was like, man, this would be good on ice cream. And he's not a huge dessert freak, so that was the first thing we did. We just put that bacon right on the ice cream, and then it became experimenting with making bacon into pralines or whatever. I still think, though, the bacon, hot bacon, is the best way to serve it on ice cream. It's hot on top of ice cream.
Yeah. Do you do that at the shop as a topping ever?
No, we don't we can't do that in our stores. It's just we don't have the right equipment.
Yeah. So
but parties.
Yeah. All this ice cream talk. I mean, you do sherbets. You do...
We do yogurts.
Yeah, yogurts, sorbets. But, I mean, the primary thing that you focused on and loved your whole life was ice cream. So much so that you went to school, in a sense, for ice cream at Penn State. Tell us about that experience.
I did. And I had already been making ice cream for, like, 3.5 years. And when I went, it sort of solidified the stuff that I'd been becoming sort of intuitive about, that I'd just been doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they never talk about anything that sounds delicious at Penn State. It's all, you know, milk proteins and lactose and sucrose, you know, and none of it sounds
butterfat
and globules and the best, you know,
globules.
Sexiest, most delicious words. But, you know, seeing that under the microscope, seeing how it works, doing all the tasting and understanding how these ingredients work together and making lots of different ice creams with lots of different defects and then sampling them and understanding how every ingredient plays a role. That was really important in my growth, I guess, as an ice cream maker.
Yeah, and Peachy
Paterno. I still can't figure out that math problem. Ice cream, you know, is a math problem.
Yeah.
And it's that is very difficult for me, but, you know, I get through it.
Yeah. I mean, but what's awesome about the book, too, is how you simplify the steps. It's literally 4 steps.
Mm-hmm.
And by going by that process, it kind of makes... I always thought you just dump everything in ice cream maker, go, go, go. But, I mean, there is homogenization, thermalization, in a sense, and there's some science to it, so you
it's all science. Yeah. It's all science. Every ingredient in ice cream plays a very important role, and it's important, you know, whether it's a very watery watermelon, it's important because it's gonna make your ice cream very icy, or you can figure out how to take care of that and make it not icy, you know? So every ingredient is doing something to your ice cream. You have to figure out. So what I did was, when I created this recipe, this is like when in my business, is I work backwards from the what I want to achieve. Scoopable, lickable, great texture first, because we can put flavor on any flavor on top of that.
Yeah.
You have to have a foundation that's scoopable.
Yeah.
And smooth. And the science at home is the same as the science in a ice cream lab or production kitchen.
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break and get back to prepping three bowls, cooking, chilling, and freezing, and making your own ice cream at home. Jenny's splendid here on the food scene at heritageradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain, from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience: how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays, noon, on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Jenny of Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream. New book by Artisan, but also 10 shops, Midwest and one in Nashville that just recently opened.
Yeah.
Three-hour line.
Yeah. The word on the street is there were 5,000 people in line. I don't think that's true, but that's what I
all
keep
clamoring
hearing.
For ice cream.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. It was great.
Do you have expansion ideas for New York?
Well, that's been something we've been thinking about for years, of course. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons that we have to be careful about expansion, but it's hard to get the ice cream here, for one thing.
Yeah.
You know? So we'll see.
Yeah, because you work with specific dairies too. I noticed.
Snowville.
Yeah, Warren Taylor.
Warren and I are like made for each other.
Yeah, but I also love that there's a profile in the book. Tell us a little bit about your relationship, how you met him, and why 16% milk fat.
Warren and I, I pursued Warren because I've pursued everybody in the dairy business in Ohio over the last many years, just to get good milk and cream. And we've seen dairies come and go. And so whenever I hear of a new one popping up, I'm, you know, hot on the trail. So, so Warren wasn't interested in me at all. It was, you know, he wants everything, just all health. He's not interested in ice cream. Ice cream's not very good for you. You know, grass fed milk and cream, you know, it's good for you. We got to get good milk to families. And he was all, and he still is all about, you know, getting non-pasteurized milk from the cow to the grocery store within a day, the same day. So he can't do that legally in Ohio, but he's working hard to make that happen. Hopefully someday it will. But, So it took a little convincing on my part, but it's running a dairy business is a very hard business. So we have this amazing symbiotic relationship. 2% milk and skim milk is more popular than whole milk. Whole milk is 4% butterfat. You take some of that cream out and you get 2% in skim milk. So every dairy has this problem. You end up with a ton of cream left over.
Yeah.
So every dairy, like Snowville, needs to hook up with an ice cream maker like me. It's perfect. So that's what we do. Every time he sells, more milk and cream or more milk, we get more cream, and we sell more ice cream, he gets more milk, and there's just no waste. In fact, we're buying more cream than what they can produce. So we're working with some other farms even now, bringing it in through Snowville, in order to make it work.
Yeah. I just had this plot in my head to somehow drink or get rid of all skim in the country to make more ice cream.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Just buy more skim milk.
Yeah, buy more skim.
Buy more
skim. Dump it down the drain.
Milk.
And
the milk is awesome, and it's grass fed. And I don't know if you've ever had a side by side comparison with grass fed and regular milk, but there's no different. I mean, it's grass fed milk is yellow.
Yeah,
it's ivory colored.
There's no
and the
comparison.
Other comparison
yeah.
is what I meant to say. The other is kind of gray. You know.
Yeah.
And it's just different. It's beautiful.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, it's crazy to see these two things lined up and see all these years drinking skim, which I thought is grayish blue. You know,
right? It has like, it is blue.
Yeah, this kind of a Pacific Northwest / London appeal to it.
yes,
but it never shone like ice cream. Summer days on the beach, you know, walking the streets, it just didn't correlate in my
mm-hmm.
mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of nice to hear that you're looking for the yellow cream.
Yeah, definitely. And when we started using grass-fed, we've always used, organic or whatever. But when we started using exclusively grass-fed, our lemon yogurt, which is my favorite of all of our
yeah.
flavors, started tasting like cheesecake. It
yeah.
was weird. We were all like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to adjust the recipe. It tastes too rich.
And you're like, don't touch
it. Shouldn't taste
yeah.
rich. This one should actually taste light and tart. And so we adjusted the recipe.
Yeah. Some flavors. Green market inspired, talking about going to farms. After you reopened Jenny's, what, in 2004?
2002.
2002. You were inspired by not just vendors, but what you had around you. Local produce, so strawberry buttermilk, cucumber creme fraiche, backyard mint. What was the impetus for this? I mean, were you seeing many ice creams that were using farmer market ingredients?
Well, and that's what I did at Scream. It was the same. It was a continuation of what I had been doing. Those flavors I had, it was just going through the market and
yeah.
getting back together with the farmers that I had, left for a couple of years. And in fact, we're still working with a lot of those farmers still to today. I like to tell a story that when I first started, we used to buy 12 flats or two $12 flats of strawberries,
yeah.
During strawberry season a week. And there's like 3 weeks of strawberry season in Ohio. So it was about $24 I would pay to the farmer. And they didn't really care that much. It was like, okay, well, if we have any leftover, you can have that. It's not that big of a deal. But last year we bought 24,000 pounds of
yeah.
strawberries from some of the same farmers that we were working with and now another, all grown in Ohio. And actually this year now it's up to more like 40,000 pounds.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's really, to me, awesome how this can scale up.
Yeah.
And how we can, like, I like to say, I didn't really make his day back then, but like we're making their year now. You know, it's great that we can help sort of promote these. And the same with our goat cheese supplier. I mean, we're her,
yeah.
By far her biggest account. And it's great. She gets to do what she loves. And so do we.
I mean, other local businesses, chocolate, where do you get that from?
Well, we get our chocolate from a Missouri chocolate maker, Sean Eskenosi, actually for one of our chocolates. And it's an awesome chocolate, it's our Eskenosi chocolate.
Yeah.
But he, it's not just single origin, it's single farm chocolate. And he's unique in the world of chocolate in that I don't know how many other American chocolate makers do this, but he actually gets his own cocoa butter out of the cocoa bean and separates the cocoa powder. And then he adds his own cocoa butter from the same farm.
Yeah.
Back in to make that, you have to do that when you're making chocolate to make it shiny and have it that crisp, I don't know that much about chocolate,
yeah.
but whatever it is that he does, the magic. So he has all this excess cocoa powder and he doesn't Dutch process it. And so I tried it and I thought, everybody talks about Dutch process, like, always get this, And I found that I really love the not Dutch processed cocoa for a different reason.
Oh, don't tell the Dutch.
Yeah. And I like the other, all chocolates, but this is really special. It has like almost like a, how like bad flavors can be good. It almost has like a fungus flavor
yeah.
to it. And it's very, acidic. So the clash with the heavy cream is really evident. And I love that about it. And it's actually lighter, but it tastes darker.
Yeah.
A bit lighter in color.
So you actually use that in your ice creams?
For one ice cream, for our Askenosi. We'll use it in all of our ice creams as soon as he can make us more.
Yeah.
We just buy all that he can produce.
Yeah. And Barley Brewery Company?
Yeah, Barley's. They're right in the parking lot with the market. So, you know, they're constantly in the market. And you know, that was something I made early on in my ice cream career. Just getting some of their stuff. They have a Russian Imperial Stout that is wonderful. It's very strong in flavor, which is great because you don't have to add very much to the cream. Because,
yeah,
you know, beer and stout are very high in water, which is your enemy in ice cream making. So yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah. So what are some of the more inelastic, your best sellers?
What's that?
As flavors go.
Best sellers?
Yeah.
Well, salty caramel. Salty caramel is 25% of our business. And we make it on we caramelize the sugar on a copper kettle over an open flame. Definitely our chocolates. Our lemon yogurt is up there with the top. And that's my favorite flavor, so maybe that's why, because I keep telling people about it. Our yogurts are
pushing
really
it
wonderful.
On them. Yeah.
The cherry lambic. Oh, and our almond brittle, the brown butter almond brittle. We did this so I would like to say we don't just follow what's growing, but we follow the emotions of the season. So in the holidays, we pull out all the stops and we do so we always have some kind of a theme and whatever. So a couple years ago, it was Norway was our theme. And we did Kroken, which was rumored to be Roald Dahl's favorite flavor.
Yeah.
And it's like an almond brittle. Well, all these Norwegians across America got wind of this. And it was one of our most successful collections ever. We shipped it all over the United States.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe how much business we were doing because word spread within that community. And we heard that it was like, you know, the best Kroken that they'd ever had and whatever.
Wow.
So it had to stay on our signature menu.
Yeah.
And now it's one of our most popular flavors.
It's a good thing you got the Norwegians after you ostracized the Dutch recently.
Right. So.
Working through that Scandinavian peninsula.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to get to the process before we run out of time. I mean, it's amazing. You hear all these flavors, hear all these stories, but the simplicity of putting these things together. Well, I mean, it's not simple in the sense as far as a business and all the times you spent, but making ice cream yourself can be very simple. 4 separate steps. Prepping 3 bowls, cook, chill, freeze. Could you run us through those?
Yeah, and I just like to get everything ready. So measure everything out. You want to get your ice bath ready because you want to cool your cream off as quickly as possible. And then just get everything prepped, and that's the 3 bowls and all your stuff. And then what you do is you bring your milk and cream and sugar and corn syrup to a boil, and you boil it. Corn syrup or tapioca syrup, it's glucose. And you boil it for 4 minutes, and that's a really important step that does a whole bunch of stuff. That's the step that replaces egg yolks in the recipe.
Yeah.
And then after that, you mix a little bit of tapioca starch or cornstarch into it to thicken it just a little bit.
Yeah, and that makes the slurry.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, you make a slurry out of that, and then you kind of drizzle that in, bring it back up to a boil. And then I mix in a little bit of cream cheese,
mm-hmm.
which is a strange thing to add to ice cream, I know, but it was like the final sort of tweak to get it. My goal was to make it as close to the ice cream I produce in my kitchen as possible. And the cream cheese gives it just that little bit of body that it needs. You can't really taste it in the ice cream, but it just gives it a little more oomph.
Yeah.
And then cool it off as quickly as possible. I like to put it in a plastic bag or a ball jar and just put it right in an ice bath and leave it there until it's cold. It has to be as cold as you can get it. So, you know, 35, 40 degrees. And then pour it in your ice machine. Make sure the canister is frozen. It had been frozen for at least 12, 24 hours. And then it'll, you know, turn it on, spin it, and you're done.
Yeah.
Now, from there, you add whatever you want to it.
Yeah.
You know, before you put it in, you can add different things. Or after, when it's coming out, you can add, you know, streusel and berries or, you know, whatever, you know, any baked good, you know. I have a whole bunch of options in the book that we actually use in our kitchen, like pralines and all sorts of different things. But you can use any of your favorite, you know, baked goods, cookies or whatever.
Yeah, and then you let it sit in the freezer before you actually serve it.
So then that's the important thing, because for me it was, I wanted to make American scoop shop ice creams, the stuff that we grew up with, that we like to go get, you know, in the artisan ice cream company. So it had to be scooped when it's solidly frozen. So yeah, you put it back in the freezer, and I will tell you, a lot of flavors develop further, especially flavors like cinnamon and vanilla and cayenne. Those will actually get a little stronger during that time. So you let it sit in there for about 4 hours, and then bring it out. You might have to temper it a little bit, but you can usually scoop it right out of the freezer.
Yeah.
And then you got a lot of time to eat it because it won't melt right away.
Yeah, excellent. Other tips. I noticed something about knowing when the ice cream is done, pulling away from the sides of a...
Well, you know, and wouldn't you know it, as soon as the day we went to print,
yeah.
Cuisinart comes out with another ice cream machine. I use Cuisinart machines. I had to choose one. I chose that one. And, you know, all those canister machines will work perfectly. So the old Cuisinart machine I found... And a lot of people still have this machine, so it's great to know this, that you'll get like a wall of super high butterfat on the side of the canister.
I'm really good at doing that.
So you have to wait until the canister is no longer freezing and the ice cream falls back into, and it will churn back into it, but you have to be patient and get through that. We realize this.
That's one thing I'm not patient.
Yeah. But if you're not patient, that wall is really tasty. It's very fine and delicious.
Yeah.
But when it goes in your ice cream, it gets a little chunky. The new Cuisinart does not do that, so you don't have to worry about that step. With the new Cuisinart, it's more efficient at scraping the sides or whatever, and it's great. And I like that machine a lot. And in fact, I think it's more efficient at freezing. It's got I don't know this for a fact. It seems to freeze it faster.
Yeah. And what do you use? I know there was a part in the book too where you traded everything in and got your $1,000 Italian ice cream maker.
To test all these recipes, I have about 20 or more of those Cuisinarts.
Yeah.
I built a test kitchen that is just a cheap, apartment kitchen, but it's a home kitchen for this book. In our professional kitchen, we use Carbogiani batch freezers. They're from Italy. They're wonderful, and I've never used anything else.
The Lamborghini of ice cream makers.
They are. Yeah, that's right.
Those things are bad. They should even make rev sound. When you turn them on.
Well, and in American ice cream, you wait till it's, until it has the right amount of air in it. That's when American ice cream makers traditionally know when it's done, when it's got enough air pumped into it and it spins enough and it's there or whatever. And it's not that frozen at that point. Then you put it in a blast freezer. With gelato machines, it's done when it's done. You don't do that step, and you don't need a batch or blast freezer. It's just, it does. The machine kind of starts to sound different, and it's done, you know?
It's so funny, your background in French. Or classical French, both art and baking, an Italian ice cream maker, and then you make American ice cream. Yet you kind of bring all these things together with certain recipes like your ice cream sandwiches, which reintroduced the macaroons of your youth.
But do you know that actually was because I was looking for something really colorful to put. We had this. I wanted to have a display cabinet in my shop that looked like a Wayne Thiebaud painting, I wanted to do donuts.
Yeah. But actually, Wayne, if you're listening, if you want to be on the show, come. Brooklyn's great.
He should.
Yeah, I know. Makes sense.
He should. I heard he's a nice guy.
Yeah. So maybe we'll have him call in one day.
But if I could have done ice cream donuts, that's what I would have done. I couldn't figure that. But so macaroons were perfect for that because you can make them in all different colors. And I wanted it to be very colorful. So even though they're French, I kind of wanted them to look really American. And we even fill them sometimes like a donut.
Yeah.
We put like a homemade... blackcurrant jam in it or something, just so it's kind of like a jelly donut.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you will ice cream donut someday to happen.
I know.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind that.
So good.
And my favorite, which oddly enough I mentioned on the show a couple times, Baked Alaska.
Mm. And our Baked Alaska is so good. We do a Baked Alaska pie.
Oh, yeah?
Which is better than a Baked Alaska, I think.
Yeah.
Our pie crust is great, too. It's not sweet and it's not salty. It's just this perfect for Baked Alaska pie crust.
Is it a traditional, like, pâté soup, pâté brisé?
It's almost just like a biscuit. kind of like a cookie, but not too sweet.
Yeah. I didn't want to end the show on a low note for me that I have to talk to a Ohio State University ice cream maker. but your Ohio State Buckeye ice cream...
Buckeye State.
Yeah, the Buckeye State ice cream. I'm a U of M fan, bleed blue and gold.
Yep.
Sorry, all you OSU fans. Sorry, Megan's father. but what was your Ohio State Buckeye ice cream?
Well, okay, so, being in Columbus and in Ohio, you cannot not notice the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that grow on the trees, and also just the peanut butter covered in chocolate candies that everybody does. And, of course, the football team. And it's pretty delicious. I mean, there's nothing, you know, even the bad ones are pretty great.
Yeah.
But in the market, there used to be one, this couple used to make these amazing, they were sweetened with honey and dipped in chocolate and peanut butter. It's wonderful. So I thought, you know, it's really good. Why would I avoid making some this? It's so delicious. And there's a peanut butter company, the oldest one in the country, Cream and Nut Company, right down the street from us. We've worked with them for years. So I started making them. But we call it the Buckeye State because I feel like we're, in a way, here to say there is so much more to Columbus, to Ohio, than the Buckeyes. And the Buckeyes are great, and they do a lot for our city. And, of course, Ohio State, having gone there and studied art and art history... Yeah. Ohio State's an amazing place, and I've spent so much time in the ice cream plant and in the food science plants and department. And I just think that there's so much more to Ohio and Ohio State and Columbus. So anyway, the Buckeye State is almost just sort of my sort of way of saying, yeah, I can do this too.
Yeah, yeah. What else? I mean, what other produce is prevalent of Ohio?
Let's see. Well, black walnuts.
Yeah.
If I had to say, what does Ohio taste like? I'd say sweet corn and black raspberries. That's a flavor that we make, and that's like the flavor of Ohio. But also, black walnuts are amazing. They're really big, and we get them wild foraged from southern Ohio. Of course, you know, strawberries all over the state. There's cherries up north. There's apricots and plums up north. Because we're in Columbus, I think of the whole state as our... is local, you know, and even like, you know, some like right over the border, you know, we're going to get bourbon from Kentucky and cherries from Michigan bourbon. And, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So you put a little booze in ice cream for the adults.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny when I was talking to you before about whether or not you eat much ice cream at the house or you let your children have ice cream. You said, no, not really in the house. We go out for ice cream. And obviously, where do you go out for ice cream?
Oh, we go to our ice cream shops.
Yeah, yeah. When did they find out about ice cream? When did they find out their mother was an ice cream maker?
I don't know. They've just always known. It's not anything big deal. They're 2 and 3 years old.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I love it when I see our trucks drive by and they recognize the logo, and they say, you know, and they call me Jenny a lot too. So like mommy too, yeah. But also Jenny. I think that's so funny because of the business.
Yeah.
And I love that. But you know, they're constantly, you know, they see it, they recognize the logo, which I just think is wild.
Yeah.
That, you know, a 2-year-old will point out and say, Jenny's ice cream.
Yeah. When you were, 22, opening up Scream with red hair, did you ever
pink
think...
Pink hair.
Pink hair. Did you ever think that this was going to be your life?
Do you know, I did. And I knew the moment I first made my first ice cream, which was I mixed cayenne essential oil into a store-bought chocolate ice cream.
Yeah.
And everybody went crazy. And I thought, geez, this is really cool. And it was like... I really feel like the sky opened up and I knew that the rest of my life this was what I was doing. And I, like, within a couple of weeks, I left my last art class and never went back.
Yeah, well.
And even, you know, at Scream when it didn't work, I had no doubts that it would work eventually.
Well, I think you're making ice cream art now. So great way to put those two things together. Thank you for being on the show. I'm going to get my lactate pill on and sample some wonderful ice cream by Jenny's Splendid. If you're in Ohio, stop by one of her stores.
Let me know you're there.
Yeah, Nashville Now. Great book by Artisan. Make ice cream at home. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. Hope to have you next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often, the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Ripper's, Boardwalk 86. Free party!